Welcome to the Tipsy Archives. This is Rachel Leagy. In this episode, Aaron and I indulged in one of our favorite pastimes, which is watching historical dramas. We watched The Crown on Netflix. This is a two-part episode. In this first one, we'll talk about episodes 1 to 5, and later on, I will post episodes 6 to 10. Today was the perfect day to post this, because it's Queen Elizabeth II's Sapphire Jubilee, which means she's been on the British throne for 65 years, which is the longest reign any British monarch has had. So congratulations, Liz, and we know you're going to live to 100 years old. So, of course, spoiler alert, you should probably have watched the show if you're going to listen to this podcast, because we do describe everything in pretty great detail. So pour yourself a glass of wine, and please enjoy. So, Aaron, are you feeling better?
I am. I mean, I might be coughing a little bit in the background, and I'm going to sort of have this great musky voice going on.
It'll add to the sexy mystique.
Yes, I like that plan.
Well, I'm glad you're feeling better.
Me too. It was kind of crappy being sick, but the best part of it was that I got to watch a lot of The Crown.
Nice. That is one of the nice things about getting ill, is you don't have to feel bad about binge-watching a lot of TV.
No, I've watched, like, you know, all 10 episodes of The Crown in the last 2 days. Mm-hmm. For the second time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I watched at least the first, I think, 5 or 6 or 7. So today we're going to talk about The Crown.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about the first 5 episodes out of the 10 in this episode. And then later on we'll record and talk about the last 5.
I think that's a great idea.
We'll just have to try to, like, you know, maintain that to under an hour each one somehow.
I feel like I could talk for an hour on each episode of The Crown.
Each character, yeah. I mean, we could have just, like, could just have a podcast about, because there's going to be more, right?
I know. Screw the Tipsy Archives. Now we're talking about The Crown. We're the Tipsy Crown.
Well, for today.
Just for today.
But also, we are happy that the Queen is feeling better.
Yes. I was very worried there for a moment.
Mm-hmm. 2016 was a cruel year.
Ooh, very cruel. And I just wasn't ready to change the words to God Save the Queen to God Save the King. Mm-hmm. I'm just not ready to learn that yet.
Mm-hmm. And I totally won't, kind of when we get there, I want to talk about what happens when a monarchy changes from a king to a queen, because that's an interesting subject.
Yes.
Elizabeth.
Yes.
I call her Liz because, you know, we're pals.
She's our buddy.
She is 90 years old now.
Yeah.
And, so I think she's been reigning for 64 years.
Something like that, yeah.
She became queen in 1952.
Yep.
And she's now the oldest living monarch.
Yes. She's surpassed the King of Thailand.
Actually, it's quite, funny. Adam and I, who you recorded an episode with, recently, which we will be posting
yes.
at some point.
Yeah.
We're having a conversation about the longest living monarchs, and she's actually quite far down. I mean, she's like the 40th, like,
yeah,
she's
44th.
Yeah, like, yeah. There's, you know, she's been reigning for 64 years, but I guess when you look at kingdoms where people have, you know, taken over when they've been children.
Yeah.
And reigned for into their 80s.
Yeah.
The longest one is an African king who ruled for around 80 years.
Yeah. Well, I was looking at that because Adam gave you or posted that that list of them, and I was looking at it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there weren't many that were in, like, modern history. Like, yeah. You know, like, Charlemagne's up there. And, yeah, there's all these, like, child kings who take over when they're, like, 4 and then rule till they're, like, 80 or something.
Probably during times when their parents were fighting a lot more battles.
Yeah.
Wars out in the battlefield.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was surprised to find that she was, you know, I thought maybe she'd be top 10 or...
I totally thought top 10.
Yeah.
I was really expecting top 10.
But she is now Britain's longest
yes.
ruler. She took over that spot from Queen Victoria a few years ago.
Yeah, that was, I think, 2 years ago, because I was in Kelowna on a wine trip when she surpassed, because we all toasted.
Yeah. So, I think this kind of goes without saying, but if you haven't seen The Crown...
you probably don't want to be.
You probably want to watch it before you listen to this, because... There's just going to be spoilers absolutely everywhere. And, I mean, it's not that much of a spoiler either because it is historical.
Yeah. Shocking. Here's the spoiler. Elizabeth is the queen.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get into it. the Crown starts out, I mean, obviously, like, this, the story of season one is how she ascends to the throne.
Yeah, and then, like, the first years of her rule,
Yeah, so we start out basically with her marriage, her wedding to Prince Philip.
Yeah.
And we were saying before we pressed record that there's so much about Prince Philip.
Oh, yeah.
That could, I would love to dig into.
Yeah, he is interesting. Like, him as a person is interesting. His family background is super fascinating.
They were a Greek royalty, but by way of Denmark and some other places, they had to flee the country.
Yeah, they had to flee Greece.
Yeah, he did have to renounce his Greek nationality, I believe, to marry her and receive his English titles.
Yes.
He took on the name of, is he related to Lord Mountbatten?
He's his uncle.
His uncle. So he relinquishes the last name that he did have.
Yeah.
Which is a string of last names that I don't have in front of me.
Yeah, it's really, really long. We'll
save that for hopefully the episode we do about him.
Yeah.
And yeah, he becomes a Mountbatten.
And the Mountbattens had just changed their name from Battenberg because of their German connections.
So, like the Windsors did.
Yes, because they were Saxe-Coburg before. Yeah. Yeah, so there's a lot of changing of names to get away from the German link. And so the Mountbattens are, I don't want to say a new family because they existed, but the name is new.
So, I mean, one thing about Elizabeth and Philip that people might not know is that it was a love match.
It was a very much a love match, although people do argue that it was slightly orchestrated on Lord Mountbatten's part.
Ah, well, Elizabeth was very smitten with him when she met him as a teenager.
Yeah, and that's where people start to say it's slightly orchestrated, is because Lord Mountbatten made sure that Philip was always around Elizabeth when she was young, and would be like, oh, he'll go babysit her.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah. Especially because he's not even that much older than her. He's like, what, 5 years older?
Yeah, I think something like when they meet, she's 13 and he's 18. Or something where at the time it's not super appropriate, but once she's, you know, around 19, it's perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, it's a lot more normal.
And they do, in the show, they don't really dig into the background too much, but they do make mention of the fact that, you know, the match wasn't heavily supported by the royal family.
No, he wasn't considered the most ideal.
Yeah, he's not, you know, the kind of aristocracy. He's a bit of a scandalous past and a scandalous family.
Well, he doesn't come from, like, his immediate family doesn't necessarily come from, like, money or their own crown at that point.
Yeah.
And it's because it's his uncle, Lord Mountbatten, that raises him, and he's a lord, not.
He has a mother who has some mental health issues.
Yeah, and and
left him as a small child.
Yeah. Well, and she gets institutionalized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she sort of styles herself as a nun.
Yeah.
Although I don't believe she ever really joined a convent or went through things officially.
I don't think so.
But she dresses like a nun.
She does dress like a nun.
Even in this first episode at their wedding, you do get a glimpse of her when they're taking pictures and being shuffled around in her strange kind of nun dress. And
I can't remember which character it is, but somebody's like, and look at the mother.
It's, I believe it's Queen Mary, Elizabeth's grandmother, and the Queen Mum. Talking, kind of saying, like, oh, Philip's family.
Yeah.
Kind of disgraceful.
Which is interesting because it's Philip's mother, because Elizabeth and Philip are second cousins? Third cousins?
I want to say third.
I think third cousins. But it's through his mother's side that they are, because she is a descendant of Queen Victoria, just like Elizabeth is a descendant of Queen Victoria.
Yeah. So she, I mean, she's quite young. I mean, she's in her very early 20s.
Elizabeth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They get married?
Yeah.
In, we said this, 1947?
Yes, 1947.
Okay, so they, you know, they get married, they have this family. Obviously, King George is alive. King George is, I think, he seems like quite a kind father. Mm-hmm. He's quite close to his daughters. Like, as much as I think, you know, a British family would be
a British royal family,
like upper class family. Like, he does seem quite doting and quite kind,
well, in all the literature I've read on Elizabeth's relationship with her father and her sister's relationship with her father, is that he was a very kind father, and mm-hmm. that they had a very close and intimate relationship,
mm-hmm.
And that they were so fond of each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think he always sort of felt a little guilty about, because he never, you know, like, we're not going to get into the whole story. We'll touch upon the abdication, but of course we have an entire 2-part episode about the abdication.
You can just go back and listen to that if you don't know anything about it.
So King George VI, Elizabeth's father, was never supposed to be king.
Mm-hmm.
But because his brother stepped down, he became king. Therefore, yeah. she becomes queen. And he kind of, with sadness, thinks this isn't necessarily the life I wanted for you.
Yeah, well, but, it's not the life that I wanted.
Yeah, but that's the way that things worked out.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, they're sort of in the first episode really introducing, you know, the relationships between the family, being George, the mother, Elizabeth,
yeah.
the daughter, Elizabeth, sometimes referred to as Lilibet,
yeah.
And the sister, Margaret.
Yeah. Well, and I find they do a really good job when they're introducing the characters, too, to talk a little bit about the background, and so they do give a little bit of those, like, history briefs, and mm-hmm. so they'll be talking about, you know, how, like, George had never wanted to be king, and then they'll have, like, a little conversation between two people that'll sort of explain what mm-hmm. happened.
It's good character exposition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Without yeah. feeling too terribly forced.
Yeah, and it's, because mm-hmm. it's always in conversation, mm-hmm. But it's always a natural conversation. I like it.
So, of course, like, we'll look at the two main characters, Elizabeth and Philip.
Yeah.
So, Elizabeth is played by Claire Foy.
Yes.
Who I don't believe I've seen in anything else.
I had not seen her in anything. Like, even if I had seen her, it would be, like, a very minor role. Like, it was never anything major.
Yeah, she obviously does a fantastic job. She just won a Golden Globe
yep.
for her role. And then Prince Philip is played by Matt Smith of Doctor Who fame.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Doctor Who fan, so I don't know if he's the 11th.
He's the 11th Doctor,
yes. The 11th Doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the and a point that you and I kind of, like, not disagree, okay, I think he's great in it.
Yeah.
I'm just not, like, I'm not a huge fan.
Whereas
I'm going to get in trouble. I'm going to get in huge trouble for saying that.
Whereas I love Matt Smith, and I think he does such a good job of Prince Philip.
He does a great job of Prince Philip in the way that yeah. I think he's rather unlikable.
That's fair. Well, and the interesting thing for me is I think he is rather unlikable. Like, he plays Prince Philip's, like, very arrogant tendencies and very, like, dominating personality and essentially, like, as an ass up very well.
It's a bro.
He's very much
him.
A bro.
Such a bro.
But there are the moments, and I think this is to Matt Smith's credit, is in his face you just see this sort of, like, emotion and sadness, and I don't know, it humanizes him to me.
You were talking about his, like, his really broody, downcast stares?
Yeah.
Because I can't stand those.
See, whereas for me, I'm like, I kind of feel for the man. Like, I think he knew what he was getting himself into, but I think he didn't.
Absolutely.
But I think at some point you don't fully quite understand, like, you, because now, in this, like, new life, anything that he wants and, like, his dreams don't matter anymore.
So, here's the thing. I mean, they're in love. She's definitely very into him.
Yeah, she loves him.
And she's this portrayed as this very sweet, polite, girl who wants everybody to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
But she's quite soft-spoken most of the time. It doesn't seem to push her opinions forward too often, at least in the beginning.
Yeah.
And he's this very, like, he kind of has this swagger. He's, you know, hanging out with the guys all the time. He's a naval officer.
Yeah.
Like I said, he's, like, he's such a bro in terms of the day.
He's got that playboy kind of feel to him.
But he knows the whole time that they are involved and they are engaged that one day she's going to be queen.
Yeah.
So he, you know, he should have some concept of what he's in for. And I did read a couple of articles kind of about historians talking about the show,
mm-hmm.
and they agree that the way that he was raised and the fact that his family was royalty, like, he would have known.
Oh, yeah, and he would have understood the implications.
That he would have to one day give up his naval career, you know, kind of follow her around mm-hmm. whenever she's doing her tours or, like, she's first, she's the queen.
Yeah.
Everything revolves around her. But that, you know, he probably did, given his personality, have frustration around it, but that the show definitely is playing that up a bit, likely yeah. for the dramatic aspect.
Exactly. But I think, the thing for me is, like, even though he knew that that was coming, and they do touch on it a bit in the show when she says, you know, I thought we'd have a few more years.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that he thinks that's going to happen, but not, you know, like, in their 20s. I think he expects it to happen, you know, like, in their 40s or 50s.
And yeah, so absolutely.
I think he expects to be able to have a life before that and to have established himself a little bit before that and then to all of a sudden be thrust into a position.
Yeah, because spoiler alert, but not. King George dies when he's 56.
Yeah.
And we find out pretty early on that he is ill.
Yeah.
He's coughing up blood.
Yeah.
And he, in the first episode, he has to have some surgery.
Yeah, the surgery, I think, is actually in the second episode, but we find out that he's sick in the first episode.
We know that he's sick. So first episode, they get married.
Yeah.
Elizabeth and Philip kind of go off. They go live in Malta. They kind of establish their young newlywed family life.
Yeah.
Where he's still in the Navy. They have their two young children pretty quickly, Charles and Anne.
Yeah, Princess Anne.
And, you know, then they get this news, like, King George needs surgery.
Yeah.
Or he's in surgery, he's sick, and then they rush back to England.
Yeah, you have to come home.
So let's talk about the surgery scene.
Oh, the surgery's epic.
It's in a ballroom in the palace.
Yeah.
Because I guess at that time they're not going to take him to a hospital.
Yeah, and I looked into that because I was like, there's absolutely no way that this is actually historically accurate. This has to be fiction. This has to be something for dramatic effect. Completely true.
No, I totally bought into it right away. I'm like, of course they operated on him in a ballroom in the palace. With, like, kind of, like, dim lighting and these machines that are just, like, it sounds like air pumping into his lungs. Like, it seems, I mean, it is 1951.
Yeah.
So, you know, the technology is not great at the time. But in that setting, it almost made it seem older than that.
Yeah, like, it seemed almost like pre-war. Like,
yeah.
It seemed like something that you would have seen almost in, like, Downton Abbey.
Yeah. Yeah, but they...
But they even normally go to hospitals in Downton Abbey.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I guess something about they don't want people to know the king. I mean, they don't even... Here's the thing.
Yeah.
They don't even tell the family. They don't even tell the king what's going on. Like, the surgeons and the doctors.
Yeah, that's the big thing, is that the surgeons keep the fact that he has cancer from him.
They remove an entire lung.
Yeah.
During the surgery, because it's completely filled, it's filled with a tumor.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's got pretty, he's a heavy smoker.
Yeah.
And so, like, they know at this point, the chance of him recovering and surviving is not very high, but they don't even tell him he has cancer.
Yeah.
Until, you know, he's recovered a bit a few months later,
mm-hmm.
and he's still coughing up blood, and he privately talks to his doctor, and his doctor finally says, listen, I wanted to tell you, but we thought it'd be better for your recovery if you didn't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you have cancer.
Yeah.
And George decides, then, to not tell his family.
Yeah. And he's like, you know, you might have a couple of, like, you might have a couple of months to live. You might have...
Maybe a year, maybe two,
yeah,
tops.
But most likely a couple of months.
Yeah. So they kind of are using this language with the family, like, oh, we found a blockage, and, like, he's doing well now, but it's really vague. They don't...
Yeah, and they're like, we've removed the blockage and...
Mm-hmm. The structural alterations, I think they keep saying. We made structural alterations.
Yeah, there's an interesting scene with Philip, where Philip goes into the room after the surgery, and he looks on the table and sees...
The lung?
The lung and yeah. how black it is, and I think he sees the tumor and everything. And you can sort of feel like, I mean, I felt like he knew, and that it kind of registered with him, mm-hmm. the severity of it. But that also could be the fact that I know how severe it is, and so... Mm-hmm. But I think that's what they were trying to imply by that scene.
So, I mean, and I think maybe people just didn't know that much about cancer back then, but also maybe this kind of, like, naively thinking, like, oh, he's our dad, of course he'll get better. Like, everything will be fine.
Yeah, well, I don't think... I mean, I'm not super fluent on what they knew about cancer at that time, but mm-hmm. I think there was... I don't think the way cancer spread was as known. I think it was, like, if he could get rid of the tumor.
Right. So, there's, the very end of the first episode, there's a very sad scene where he has just found out that he only probably has a few months to live.
Yeah.
And it's Christmas, and he's with the family, and he's singing, and he's crying, and he's wearing this paper crown.
Yeah, that these the people from the town have brought to him, and...
Like, it's so sad.
It's so sad, and he's trying to say something to them, but he's too emotional to say it. And
so, how do you feel about Jared Harris's portrayal of George the Sixth?
I think he does a good portrayal of him. I don't physically, I don't think he looks enough like King George. And I find him a bit too harsh as King George.
Yeah, there's that one part where he, like, really snaps at his valets, and I was kind of...
Yeah.
I was like, I wonder if there must be some evidence for that if it's in the show, but...
I know that he was he had a temper.
We kind of see that in the King's speech.
Yeah, and I actually just recently read the biography of Lionel Logue, who's the speech pathologist for.
I bet that would be pretty cool.
It's fascinating. I can lend it to you. It was really, really good. But they talk about how he did oftentimes snap, and he just did have a short fuse, but he would always sort of calm down immediately after. And then they also do talk about just how kind he is and, like, the relationship that they had. Like, they'd always send each other Christmas cards, and, like, when Lionel's wife died, George was really supportive, and...
Yeah, I mean, he seems like a very kind man who has a lot of frustrations and a lot of stress on him, and, you know, he dealt with his stutter, and he's got a lot of stuff to deal with, and so, I mean, I feel like, I think that Jared Harris is a great actor. I've seen him in other stuff, like, he's in Mad Men.
Yeah.
And other things, and I think he does a good job, but to me, he's not really George.
No, I always just, I picture George a little bit softer, and I feel like all of the images that I see of George are a little bit softer, too.
It's just there's really a kind of a different look about his face, too. Like, I was trying to think of, like, who an actor would be to portray him a little better. And, like, it's not quite right, but, like, the only thing I could kind of come up with is maybe, like, an older Jude Law or something.
Yeah.
His kind of the eyes, maybe.
Yeah, I could see that.
He did a good job in the role, but, yeah, it's just the the look for me was not quite there.
Yeah.
I think... the King's Speech, I'm blanking
Colin
out.
Firth.
Colin Firth, like, is a little closer for me.
I think, I agree. Colin Firth is a little bit closer, but even Colin Firth I didn't feel like was quite
not bang perfect. On. I think, like, he specifically and some other members of his family, like, they have a very particular look.
Well, that's actually why I didn't like the portrayal of George in W. We talked about W before, but I really liked.
I mean, he was kind of a really weak background character, I think.
Yeah, but the actor that played him, whose name completely escapes me right now, just his physical look struck me more as who George would be. But as, like, an older actor, I'm trying to think of, but I do like your idea of, like, an older Jude Law.
I think it's just there's something about his eyes that kind of.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was looking at pictures of George the Fifth, but maybe if I come up with somebody better, we'll
see.
So then Queen Elizabeth, George's wife, the Queen Mum.
Yeah.
She's played by Victoria Hamilton, who her face is a bit more recognizable to me. She's in Mansfield Park.
Yeah, that's where I know her from, Mansfield Park. I used to watch a lot of Jane Austen with my mom, and so I've definitely seen her in that.
And, you know, I think she does a good job for me. She seems to, like, fill out the role of the Queen Mum as a young woman. I like her. I mean, I don't really think in the first season they really flesh her out too much.
I mean, I'd always thought that the Queen Mum was a bit stronger of a character.
Yeah.
Because they do play her kind of weak. I don't know if that's just because of Helena Bonham Carter's portrayal of her in The King's Speech and Natalie Dormer in W, where they're both very strong-willed women. I feel like she's a bit too weak in it. But, I mean, she is someone who just lost her husband, and...
Yeah, almost... I don't know, what's the word? I think you do get the one sort of time that I kind of got a glimpse of her being a little bit more in control, which is how, because I think she really was a pillar of strength for Birdie or George. Through a lot of his reign, was when she deals with his personal secretary, Tommy, and she's kind of like, you tell me what's going on. You report back to me. And that's kind of the one time so far rewatching the episodes that I'm like, okay, there's her kind of like keeping an eye on everything. So, yeah, where were we? We were just talking about how he's incredibly ill. He doesn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
And while this is happening, because he's too sick to travel, he decides that he needs Elizabeth and Philip to go fulfill his kingly duties and go on this Commonwealth tour, which would normally be a thing he would do.
Yeah.
And it's like they're going to Australia, New Zealand, Kenya is where they start out.
Yeah, they're gonna go to Africa. Mm-hmm. I think
South Africa.
Yeah.
So it's going to be quite a few months that they're...
Yeah, it's like 5 or 6 months.
They're traveling around, and he sends her out on this trip knowing that there's probably a good chance he is not going to survive her getting back.
Yeah.
And she has no idea.
She has absolutely no idea. And you find that out, especially she's talking with Philip about how she would like to go back to Malta at some point.
Yeah, she says, like, let's go back to your naval career.
Yeah.
You know, like, I want you to have your life again. And
I miss that life, too, because, well, and I mean, she knows eventually that she will have to be queen. And so I think getting to, you know, enjoy a bit of a regular life first is, I mean, it's very normal.
Yeah, they have two small kids. She's, like, 24. He's, you know, about 30-ish. And they're quite young.
They're very young. And you know, it's the 50s. It's the early 50s at that time. Mm-hmm. The war's just ended. They were both in the war.
Yeah.
I always forget that, like, she was...
She was a mechanic.
Yeah, and they talk about that because she has to fix one of the cars in Kenya. It's very exciting.
Yeah, I like they kind of make a little a nod to that when one of the Jeeps is overheating and she's like, oh, let me take a look at it. I know what I'm doing. I was a mechanic in the war.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one thing that I do like about her, too.
I think the guy who created the Crown, he also is the director and creator of The Queen.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a scene like that where she says something about how she was a mechanic in the war in The Queen as well, and it's great.
Mm.
It's like, you really like just promoting that The Queen was a mechanic during the war.
Peter Morgan?
Yes, Peter Morgan.
I read a little article about him, and he was saying that he has never met anyone in the royal family.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done extensive research on them.
Yeah.
And he was basically saying, like, I hope I never meet them. Because, like, it'll be so stressful, and, I just, I hope I don't want it to ever happen.
Well, because he is a huge monarchist, too, and, like, it's not one of those people that does these shows or movies on the royal family because he doesn't like them. He wants to make it as historically accurate as possible. He knows he has to take some liberties with it.
Yeah, because he's digging up some dirt and putting it out there for, you know, everybody. And, of course, a lot of people in England who are very into the royal family probably know some of this stuff. But to all the people, you know, watching now on Netflix...
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of drama that people didn't necessarily know about before.
Yeah.
So...
Well, like,
thanks for good TV.
It's great TV. And, like, I'm up on my British monarchy. I'm up on the royal family. Especially, like, I'm not as up on, like, the modern royal family. But especially, like, Elizabeth and Philip and all that. I knew quite a lot about that. Their lives... And there's stuff that I learned.
Oh, yeah, there's stuff that comes up in here that I didn't... I mean, I didn't know that George didn't know he was dying until...
Yeah.
Right before he died, basically.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah, one thing I want to touch upon that we didn't say before they went on their trip, the scene where George takes Philip out hunting.
Yes, that's such a good scene.
And so Elizabeth is kind of saying, like, oh, spend time with him, you know, father-in-law, son-in-law, like, take him out hunting and... They have this scene where they're kind of out in a boat and they're, I don't know, shooting ducks or something. There's a lot of hunting. There's a lot of shooting. George seems to spend most of the time that he's on screen before he dies hunting.
Yeah, I was sort of like, did you ever do anything except for hunt? Like, so my portrayals of George have in the things that I've seen him in recently have been, he does a lot of speech therapy, a lot of speeches, and hunts.
Mm-hmm. They're out in this boat, and he kind of turns to Philip, and they've not been married very long.
2, 3 years, 4 years.
He kind of gives him that speech where he says, like, you know, the titles, you know, being a duke, that's not what you're here to do. That's not your job. The job is her. Like,
yeah.
You need to love her and support her.
Make her happy.
And he's really looking at him. He's like, you understand that? And Philip's kind of like, yeah, I think so. And I'm watching the second time through, and I'm like, you don't even know.
Well, and it's really, you know that he's saying it because that job is coming right around the corner. Like,
yeah,
George knows that at most it's a year from now that he's going to have to take over that job. And
I'm sure he can see the dynamic between Elizabeth and Philip. It's sort of, he's a bit dominating and she's a bit meek and...
Well, there's the conversation that he has with Elizabeth that leads to them going out, where she asks George, and she's like, is it a burden, like, having to go through all of this stuff every day? Is it hard?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, this is where it's very important to have a happy marriage and a happy partner. Your mother has been my pillar of strength, mm-hmm. and I was very lucky, and I hope you will be as well.
Yeah.
And then that's when she mentions things about Philip and how...
He's having a bit of a tough time.
Yeah, he's having trouble adjusting, and
yeah.
he likes to do this, and asks her father to take him out and talk.
Yeah, I mean, he's not even really very happy to be on the Commonwealth tour. He would rather be, you know, doing his naval stuff, or...
Yeah, I think he feels...
Inconvenienced.
Emasculated a bit, too, I think.
Because he's following her around.
Yeah.
In her role.
Yeah.
And he makes all these kind of, like... I mean, I really enjoyed the scenes... in Africa. I thought they were very interesting. They certainly give you... I mean, you don't necessarily think about things being colonial in the 1950s, but mm-hmm. it reminds you that that's still happening. And the scene where she's giving the speech in Nairobi, and she's saying, like, it was just a few years ago that you were savages.
Yeah! And everybody's like, clap, 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 clap.
Yeah. Golf clap. And then, like, the you know, locals there, the Kenyans, are kind of just like, yeah, okay. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Like, although they all seem to really adore her.
Kind of. I feel like a lot of them just kind of stare at her and are like, yeah.
Yeah.
But the ones in the house that are kind of working in the house, they're very sweet to her.
Yeah.
But more so, it seemed like the tribal leaders were like very kind of stonewall.
Yeah. Well, then there's the scene where Philip's going up and talking to them.
That's what I mean. He's like, nice hat, buddy. Like,
where did you steal those medals?
Yeah, and she's like, it's a crown.
Yeah,
don't antagonize these people. Or he's just being a little bit of a douche. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
He's charismatic, but he just doesn't get what's appropriate and what's not. Broad. Yeah.
That's where they are. They're in Africa when George does pass away in his sleep.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a race to get the news to her, because they have to start reporting it on the radio. The whole world's finding out the King of England has died, and she is now the Queen.
Yeah, and the BBC is willing to hold off on it as long as they can. Eventually they're like, no, we have to...
Tell people.
We have to tell people. And it's true, like, she is one of the last people to find out that mm-hmm. she has become the Queen of England.
Yeah. So, to which, of course, she has to fly back... immediately. And then, you know, what's the name of the secretary that she has initially, and then she has to replace him? The one that we like.
The one we like.
The friendly secretary.
It is, I just always mispronounce his last name, so let me just get it up again. It's Martin Trotters.
Okay. So yeah, Martin kind of says, you know, he finds her and tells her, and
yeah,
he says, like, what's your regnal name gonna be? And she's like, well, my name's Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Like, because of course, you know, many people change their names. So this is where I want to talk about what happens when there's a big change in the monarchy. And you've probably read some of these articles that have been out in the last year, especially after the Queen just had her cold and was sick and people were very concerned about her. What happens if the Queen dies, which is not going to be for another 10 years, but, I mean, big shift, because at that point, we had to change everything from in the name of the king, or anything that had his name on it.
Yeah.
So, like, you're talking coins, stamps, you know, passports, just anything. Anything in the Commonwealth, anything that has the name of, like, I don't think you have to change, like, your passport retrospectively, but, like, anything that's being issued with anything that says in the name of the Queen, God bless the Queen, or in that case, at that shift, it was from the King to the Queen. But when Queen Elizabeth passes away, it'll shift to the King. So apparently, like, it costs billions of dollars to have to change all this stuff.
So they're probably really happy that she's lived a really long time.
Yeah, but, like, and apparently, like, the whole country is gonna, like, come to a halt. Government businesses will shut down for almost 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's typical in most monarchies. I was in Thailand when the king's sister passed away, and even then it started to shut down. So I can only imagine what it was like when he passed away recently.
The one who had been reigning for 70 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, like, it's a big change when you, especially, like, not even just you're going from one ruler to another, but if it goes from king to queen or queen to king, and then I was reading about what, you know, if Charles ascends to the throne, like, is he going to become Charles III?
Yeah, would he keep Charles?
Because, well, like, the previous Charleses haven't been super great.
Yeah, well, sort of like there'll never be another John, probably.
Yeah. Wasn't Charles the first the one that they executed?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So, the article I was reading was kind of saying that some people pressure him, you know, have suggested to him that he should become George the VII.
That's my cat.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, and we have had a lot of Georges.
We've had a lot of Georges. We've had a lot of Edwards. Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of... There's been quite a few Charleses, haven't there, though?
Well, he would be the third.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's only been the two. I couldn't tell you about... I'm pretty sure Charles I was the son of... he's a Stuart.
Yeah.
He's like...
He is. I was actually just listening to the Revolutions podcast on him.
I was listening recently. To it, too. I haven't gotten... I'm only about halfway through it.
Yes.
But, man, he really fucked a lot of stuff up.
Well, and he just doesn't get money at all. And, like, I mean, it's back in the whole, like, you're my friend, so I'm going to appoint you to this.
He just keeps making these really large... gestures of, like, decisions where it's just like, that was 100% the wrong thing to do.
No, it's ridiculous. That's a good podcast, though.
Yeah, I find it a little dry. I find it very interesting.
Yeah.
But I do sometimes find it a little bit dry to get through too many of them. But I was enjoying it, and I should go back.
I'm not sure he does that on the History of Rome as well, but I find the History of Rome, his version of History of Rome, it's just too dry, especially for me
because very, the classics political.
Major. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I didn't get through that one either.
Yeah, but there's Revolutions I can get into a little bit more.
We shouldn't slam other people's podcasts on the podcast. We love it. It's interesting. It's super great.
It's great. Pat, my husband, loves it. He's your biggest fan. but yeah, it's very interesting with that because in keeping Elizabeth, too, she's one of the first in a while, at least, because Victoria was not Victoria. She was...
Oh, wasn't she?
No.
Well, I mean, because she's following Elizabeth the First. I mean, that's the only other one.
Yeah.
So to decide to be Elizabeth the Second, I mean, that's a... You're kind of making a... Not necessarily, but, like, you're making a pretty huge comparison, or, like, you're measuring yourself up to a gigantic figure.
Yeah,
in
no,
the history
exactly.
of British monarchs.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I mean, it's the dawning of the second Elizabethan age.
Well, and they talk about that. They mention that. But yeah, no, Victoria was Alexandrina. Victoria.
Oh, okay.
And so then when she becomes queen, she says she's never liked the name Alexandrina, which you can't really blame her. It's kind of long.
Mm-hmm.
And so she goes by her middle name, Victoria. And then all of her, like her son, changes his name to go by Edward. Because I believe he's an Albert as well.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And then George.
George Edward. George.
Yeah. So many Georges.
So after she gets back, and, you know, of course they do George's funeral. It really takes quite a while for her to have a coronation. Like, I can't remember exactly why. I mean, so let's talk about enter her having to go into political life now.
Yeah.
Which she's been prepping for just a little, but really not too much. And Winston Churchill...
Yeah.
Has just become prime minister again.
For the second time, yeah.
Yeah, he was, of course, prime minister through most of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And was replaced, was, like, Attlee and the Labour Party were voted in towards the end of, like, the very end of the war.
Yeah.
And they were around for about 5 years, and then he runs again, and he gets back in.
Yeah.
And he's quite old.
Yeah,
at this point.
He's, like, late 70s at this point. And in not the greatest health.
No. I mean, I think, like, most of the pictures and representations you see of Winston Churchill, he never really looks that much like a shining beacon of health.
Well, he's a portly, hunchback
yeah.
kind of man.
Yeah. So in The Crown, he's portrayed by John Lithgow.
Which is so weird at first. Because it's...
I'm such a big fan of his.
I'm such a big fan of his. You've seen him in far more dramas than I have, because I've mostly just seen him in...
Yeah, he plays a serial killer in Dexter.
Oh, I've never watched Dexter.
And it's awesome.
That sounds like it would be
awesome. He plays, a bad guy in a lot of sort of, like, I think, 80s films, like action films and stuff.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, because my parents, when... I used to watch Third Rock from the Sun, where he's... the star of
yeah
it.
So people of our age group in their 30s probably know him from Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah,
where he plays a wacky head alien dude.
Yeah,
he's like so over the top and hilarious.
It's amazing. But I remember, because I was a kid living at home with my parents watching it, because, you know, it was in the 90s, and they knew him from all kinds of things from before, when he was a much more serious actor.
I mean, he really does have quite a bit of range. And I'm just looking at his IMDb page right here. In real life, he's 6'4". So for the role of Winston Churchill, I mean, he really does kind of, like, hunch himself down
yeah.
quite far.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm sure they do things with the camera to make him look, you know, shorter, because, like, Churchill's not a very tall guy.
No.
I'm assuming, especially with the hunch and the cane. And, like, facially, he definitely looks quite different from Churchill.
Yeah. I mean, there's moments where they really get that bulldog look.
But I think he does a very good job of acting and like, embodying the kind of the physicality of him and the gruffness of him, that even though I know he doesn't look just like Churchill and it is a bit different, like, I buy it, and I think he does a great job.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think he really gets the character of Churchill.
Yeah, he's very gruff. And I very much enjoy the woman who plays his wife as well, who I've seen in a lot of different British shows.
Yeah, I know her from the Gwyneth Paltrow version of Emma. She's also in... Oh, maybe it's... Sorry, it's not... the Jane Austen version of Emma. It's Sense and Sensibility. She's Fanny Dashwood in Sense and Sensibility.
Yeah, she plays Lady Shackleton in Downton Abbey. She's definitely been in a couple of... she's in a couple episodes of Midsummer Murders.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, like, who as a British actor has not
been
in Midsummer
Murders? Oh, I feel like everybody's been in all
It's the Law and Order of the UK, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I enjoy her whenever I see her pop up in shows, and they make a pretty good combo.
Yeah, no, they do a really, really good job.
As a Clementine Churchill is her name. The character's name, obviously. Harriet Walter is the actress's name. Yeah, so Elizabeth has to come back, and now she's dealing with Churchill, and, you know, Churchill's this old, gruff dude, and she's this young, inexperienced girl, and he very much overpowers her when she comes in and kind of, they have these meetings, and she's like, okay, what should we do today? And he's like, this is what's happening, this is what Parliament wants, and she goes, oh, well, maybe we should, and he's just like, that's not the way we do it.
Yeah, like, well, and she asks him to sit at the beginning, and he's like, oh dear, I see nobody has told you.
Yeah, they're like, you don't, as the queen, do this or do that.
You never ask me to sit. I never sit. That would indicate that we were equal, or that we'd talk for a long time.
But the poor man has a cane.
I know, and she's just like, this is so awkward.
Yeah. And I can't remember why they want to put her coronation off for so long.
Oh, he wants to put it off.
Yeah, and they do put it off for, what, 13 months or
16
something.
Or something like that. So, and that's actually, it gets into the next thing we're going to talk about, too. The reason why they want to put it off is, there's pressure from within Churchill's own party to remove him because of his age
and his health,
and that he's just kind of being a little bit crazy. And so in the first episode, Anthony Eden goes to see King George.
So he's just another sort of senior ranking member of Churchill's party?
He's the second in command.
Right.
He's the foreign secretary.
Okay, so this is within the Conservative Party. Anthony Eden is a high-ranking member, but he's younger, and he's more of a fresh face, and people are like, you should be in charge.
Yeah.
So they really are pushing for him to be up there, and he approaches George while he's alive and kind of suggests this, like, you should get rid of Churchill and put me in charge, and George really isn't having any of it.
Yeah, he's having none of it.
He's like, I'm not gonna step in and mess things up. That wouldn't be very, you know, that wouldn't be my job as a sovereign to do that, or...
Yeah, my role is to just make sure that order and law is happening. It is not my job to interfere.
To shake up Parliament, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the separation. The reason why Churchill wants to put off the coronation is that nobody will press the issue if he's planning her coronation. Oh. And so by giving himself 16 months, he has 16 months to prove himself as leader of the Conservative Party and hopefully suppress the momentum to remove him.
Mm. So, you know, very quickly after she becomes queen, we have the episode with the fog.
Yeah, we have
the London fog, London smog, whatever you call it.
Yeah,
which, as we were discussing earlier, is, I think, a bit played up in the show as being a more dramatic incident.
Yeah, so it is an incredibly dramatic incident, mm-hmm. but there wasn't the fear in the lead up to it, and there wasn't, I think, like, as it was happening, people didn't quite understand the effects of it either.
Well, how many people were dying? And so, I mean, this obviously was a real incident that happened, that a fog or a smog descended on London for a number of days or a week or something. And It was so thick that you couldn't drive, you could barely walk around. And the people that were dying, I think, were people who are already susceptible to lung issues, older people, people with asthma. So it didn't maybe seem alarming at the time that a 7-year-old person died.
Yeah.
But when they looked back, they went, oh, shit, like...
Yeah.
The percentages of, you know, the people that died during this period of time was way higher than normal.
Well, they estimate that based... Like, this is sort of after the effect, once they realize that, you know, people died during it. And I think it's, like, 2,500 or something like that died in those 4 days.
Yeah.
Which is an insane number of people. And so that's from, you know, people being hit by a bus, like one of the characters does in the show. That's people with asthma dying. And then it's also people die afterwards because it's affected their health so poorly.
Right.
And so there's like 6,000 to 12,000 deaths.
Like we said, like the smog obviously was a huge deal to London. At the show, The Crown plays it up a little bit to be a little bit more of a dramatic, like, we need to do something. What's the government doing? Oh my God. And in the show, Churchill kind of uses it to his advantage too. Well, he, first of all, kind of is like, it's no big deal. It's smog. He then comes in at the last moment and kind of goes on the radio and gets some glory. And
yeah.
He uses it to promote himself.
Exactly.
And so while during this episode, that's all about the smog, one character we haven't really talked about at all also begins to get ill.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's the smog or not, I don't know. I think she's also just very old. This is Queen Mary.
Yes.
Queen Mary of Teck, who is George's mother.
Yes.
And she's, at this point, becomes quite bedridden. And, you know, and we like Queen Mary. She's a real ball buster.
She's such a ball buster.
She's a cold German badass.
Yes. And there's a lot of literature that I read, actually, not for this podcast, but when we were podcasting about the abdication and about the episodes, the King's Speech and W, about how...
Oh my God, we haven't even talked about Edward and Wallace yet.
I know, there's so much to talk about. Maybe like a four-parter, we'll see what happens. Mary of Teck was very cold to her children.
Mm-hmm.
Well, both her and her husband were very cold to their children.
She's just... That's kind of the lady that she is, and... one part that we didn't talk about, but when during the time where Elizabeth finds out that her father has died and she's coming back.
Yeah.
They sort of do this voiceover of Mary writing Elizabeth this letter.
Yeah.
And I was saying to you earlier that I love the letters.
Yes.
In the show, they add such good context to the characters.
Yeah.
And this letter, she's saying to her, you know, part of you is going to die now. You are becoming queen. And Elizabeth Mountbatten, who's like this private individual, this wife, mm-hmm. she's doesn't exist anymore. You're Elizabeth Regina now. You are the queen. And no matter what happens, that has to come first.
Yeah.
You have to kind of like let go of part of yourself.
Yeah. Mourn the loss of your father. Mourn the loss of Elizabeth Windsor, or Elizabeth Mountbatten.
Yeah. And then so she comes back and they're mourning George, and the scene where they kind of like walk towards each other in the room and Queen yeah. Mary's wearing this big black veil and she bows to her very deeply, and it just seems very kind of like morbid and like ghastly almost. Like, it's just so intense.
It really reminded me of something out of like Richard III.
Yeah.
Like, it was just so, like, it was very Shakespearean.
Yeah.
It was very epic.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
Well, and it was very interesting, too, when they tell Mary that George has died. Mm-hmm. And she just wails.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting because she's a very sort of reserved and cold woman. And so having that, it was very, like, disconcerting when I was watching it, just seeing that emotional reaction. But I mean,
she really loved George, you know, yeah. or Bertie. And I think also because of the disappointment that she suffered because of David/Edward.
Yeah.
Who we forgot to mention came back for George's funeral.
Yes.
So we've got Prince, you know, the former Prince of Wales, the former King Edward the VII?
Yeah.
Who abdicates the... Oh, no, the 8th. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 8th. Edward the 8th, who abdicated the throne to Mary Wallace Simpson.
Yeah.
Which we talked about in a 2-part episode. And then another one about the movies that she's in. So if you listen to the podcast, you should be very familiar with all of these characters.
If you don't know who Wallace Simpson is, you haven't been listening.
Yeah. She's basically our best friend.
You have poor listening skills.
So he comes, like, David comes back for both George's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes back again while his mother is sick.
Yeah.
Right before she dies.
Yeah.
Both times Wallace can't come because she's not invited.
Yeah, and he's very upset about that. So he writes her scathing letters.
Oh, he writes her these great letters about, like, my family are a bunch of cold-blooded, ice-veined monsters.
Yeah. Like, and then he goes on about the little nicknames that he had for them. Like, he used to call Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mom, Cookie, because she was dumpy and looked like a cook.
Yeah, he calls her, refers to her pudgy little fingers.
Yeah.
And he calls Elizabeth Shirley Temple.
Yeah.
I can't remember who, like, they don't really mention too many other names, but they have these, like, nasty little nicknames for everyone.
Yeah.
Because, like, they're, you know, they're so bitter. They're not part of the family anymore. They're off living in France on their, like, limited allowance that they get.
Well, one of the things that gets repeated over and over and over again is that he has a title. She's been given, she's a duchess, mm-hmm. but she does not have the title Your Royal Highness.
Yeah, because she is twice divorced, so yeah. She does not deserve that title.
Yeah.
And he comes back, and having not seen his family for years, and he's there to mourn his family and to hang out with his sick mom, but he has goals.
Oh, yeah, he wants more money.
He wants more money, he wants a title for his wife, and, you know, he's just like, I might as well get all I can out of them.
And he goes and actually has dinner with Churchill, because Churchill had stuck up for him during the abdication process, because Churchill had said, I don't believe that you should have to step down over love. Because it was Chamberlain who was like, no, you're going to have to do this.
Baldwin.
Baldwin, yes. Sorry, not Chamberlain was part of it, but Baldwin was the one
Well, it was a lot of people who were not having what was going on there.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, he kind of waltzes back into England, gets off that plane like a little bit of a celeb.
Yeah.
Like, he's, you know, all these reporters, and he's just like, oh, I'm back, hello.
Hello, everybody loves me. And
he loves the attention.
Oh, he's such an attention.
I think that's what he's always sad over, is just not having that attention anymore.
Yeah, well, and there are scenes like that, I think it's actually in that episode, where he is to meet with the Archbishop and Tommy, the secretary, to talk about something. And he's like, yeah, we'll go with this time. And his butler or whoever is like, no, actually, they've proposed this time. And he's like, okay. And then he's like, all right, well, get some tea and stuff ready. And they're like, no.
You have to go there.
And he's just like, oh, I'm not the king anymore. Yeah, now like, I go to them. Yeah.
They don't come to me anymore. I go to them. I have to do what they want. They don't listen to me anymore. Because he would have, like, after he abdicated, he would have left right away.
Well, that's, I believe there's a scene of that where George is like, you're going to have to go.
Yeah, I mean, and they do a couple flashbacks to that time of him giving his radio abdication sort of address to the people about why he's stepping down, which
has a problem in it because Wallace is there.
Yeah, and they show him talking to the people on the radio like, I have to step down, I can't be with the woman I love, and she's sitting behind him on the couch, but she was not there. We are quite certain she was not there. She was out of the country. She was never allowed to be around while any of that was happening.
No, she was sent out of the country for her own personal safety.
Yeah. I can understand why they can't.
It adds to it.
They can't in The Crown give you the entire abdication background.
No, and it's a lot better to have her there because you understand exactly what's happening when she's there, too. Mm-hmm. Also, the casting of Wallace and Edward is incredible.
It's great, yeah.
I was pulling up a picture of them. They look so much like the actual Wallace and Edward.
Yeah, and as much as I love Andrea Riseborough in W.E., like, I love her performance, this actress who plays Wallace, facially, like, physically, is bang on.
Oh, she is incredible, and
she's got this very kind of, like, her thin-lipped, you know, angular, she looks like Wallace, for sure.
Yeah, no, she is amazing, and Alex Jennings as the Duke of Windsor, he is just fabulous.
He's so David.
I think I was mentioning to you earlier that he actually plays Charles in The Queen.
Right.
And so it's quite interesting because he doesn't really look like Charles, but he's a great actor, and so he's incredible as playing Charles in The Queen.
Oh, wow. The woman who plays Wallace Simpson, Leah Williams, if you look at her IMDb picture, she looks entirely different.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. She's got, like, this little blonde short haircut.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They really, like, do a lot of makeup and stuff on her to make her look like Wallace, but it works really well.
Yeah. No, she is a dead ringer for Wallace.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're kind of, and then, of course, Cookie, the queen mom, is like, she just hates having him around, and she's
so angry.
I mean, she just thinks he's a virus, basically.
Well, and he's trying, like, we know that he has ulterior motives, but in the scenes, he's trying to build this relationship with Elizabeth and Margaret, the queen mom will just have nothing to do with it.
He's just relishing every moment that he might have a little bit of influence.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth definitely, young Elizabeth, she, I think because her father's gone now, and because David just has, like, that little bit of experience, she's just, like, she wants to get a little bit of advice from him.
Yeah, well,
which he totally just uses to his own means, but
oh, yeah, exactly. But she wants to talk to somebody who's been in her shoes, because now she's, there is no, he's the only living person at that point who's ever been in her shoes.
Yeah, I mean, because there normally is never
a
living king.
But normally, I guess, because
she didn't get to talk to her dad a lot because he kept it all secret before he died.
Died, yeah. And that's, to go back to the fact that he kept it secret, it seems really irresponsible that he did not tell. Like, not even just, like, keeping it from your family because it's weird to keep it from your family, but it seems really irresponsible knowing that your daughter is going to be inheriting your job to not leave her, like,
well, and to send her off to, like, and I know that's royal responsibility, but as opposed to keeping her close and doing more one-on-one sort of training and prepping.
Yeah, and be like, this is what it's like day to day.
Like, it showed a little bit of that happening,
but not to the extent.
But then he sent her away.
Yeah.
Where she's basically just, like, looking at elephants and giving speeches.
Thinking that she's going to get to go back to her normal life. Mm-hmm. It just seems really irresponsible. Mm-hmm. Bad George.
Bad George.
I feel like I'm talking to my cat there with the bad George.
But your cat's name is Wellington.
Yes, so I recently got a cat. His name is Wellington George the VII Meacop.
Nice.
Yes.
I met him once.
He's getting very affectionate. and people keep asking me, why George the VII? And I'm like, or why the 7th? And I'm like, because George the 6th is taken.
Yeah.
And then you get this, like, ding, ding, ding in everybody's eyes. It's great.
We were playing Trivial Pursuit in the summer with my family, and one of the questions was, how many British kings have been named George? And right away I was like, six.
Six, yeah.
And my grandma was just like, how do you know that? And I'm just like, because Elizabeth's father was George the 6th.
Like, duh.
Who doesn't know that? Hey, where were we? Okay, we're going off about David and Wallace.
We've been going off about David and Wallace.
So he comes and he visits. He comes back for George's funeral.
Yeah.
He kind of hangs out with the family a bit, kind of works his wiles on, you know, some, you know, tries to get a bit more money, hangs out with Churchill, and then he does go back.
Well, because they have the conversation with him, too, because the coronation is coming up.
Yeah.
And so that was the thing that I was talking
about,
where
he
gets
back
called
the second time when Mary is sick, and they, he gets called to have this meeting with Tommy and the Archbishop and another secretary dude.
Yeah.
And they're basically trying to be like, it's not very appropriate for you to come to a coronation because a living king.
Yeah.
They just don't want him there because they don't like him.
They don't want him there. Well, and they try to go and talk about the fact that Wallace wouldn't be invited.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, well, if the woman I love can't come, then I won't come.
And I always feel like he kind of throws her name out as an excuse. He's just like, I'm not getting the treatment I want, so it's because of my wife.
And he always calls her the woman I love.
Yeah.
The woman I love.
Yeah.
The woman I love. It's like, so David, how do you feel about her?
Well, and like, so in The Crown, they really play up, they do definitely play up the whole, like, they're so in love. This is a great love story thing. Whereas we do talk about in the podcast that we do that it's a bit more complex than that. And it's really fraught with a lot of, I think, like, anxiety and, like, people making weird decisions. And it's not as simple to say, like, it's just a great love story.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot more going on than that, and I think it was a lot more difficult than that.
Yeah.
If you want to know, you can listen to that episode.
We're just plugging that episode.
Well, I mean, like, we talk about so much of the same stuff in that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the portrayal in this show is that, like, there's just such a great love. And then we were talking about the scene where they show them hanging out together.
Yeah.
And they're laying in bed together. And I said, like, this is kind of shocking to me because it was a show about British royals.
Yeah.
And that, like, they're laying in bed together and they're talking about his family and, you know, and I hear what they're saying, but he's just like, oh, my stupid family. And then he, like, looks at her and he's just like, shall we fuck now? Or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe we just said that.
To hear, there are a lot of graphic moments. And, like, not overly graphic moments, but there is a lot of vulgar moments at the beginning of it. George the Sixth does this, like, vulgar limerick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, about ladies' private parts and things, and
And you see Matt Smith's butt.
You do see Matt Smith's butt.
I was really happy with that. Rachel was not as happy with that.
Yeah. It looked okay. I mean, there's definitely a lot of, like, sexy flirtiness between Philip and Elizabeth at, like, a couple different points.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's Margaret, her sister. And
we haven't even talked about Margaret.
Yeah, well, and that actually sort of ties in, actually, because we've been talking about Wallace and Edward.
Yeah.
And they do, in this episode, the one with George's funeral, they do a lot of sort of, because Margaret has a romance with Peter Townsend, who is a married aide to her father. And then when her father dies, she convinces her mother to keep him on staff.
Mm-hmm. Then they kind of hint at this, like, through every episode, with it sort of building.
Yeah, there's, like, a flirtation going on. There's nothing explicit. Mm-hmm. It seems sort of like a crush at first, although he'll occasionally look at her, too. And then
The part where she's sauntering through the whole, like, palace, and then she just walks into his office, and she grabs him and kisses him, and then she, like, wipes her mouth and walks off or something.
Yeah, and then they flash immediately to a scene of Wallace and Edward.
Yeah, so they make all this juxtaposition between Margaret and Peter, because he does leave his wife during these years.
His wife leaves him, actually.
Yeah, his wife leaves him, but he's divorced.
Yeah, he's a divorce.
And she's also this, like, young person. person with, like, she's got a lot of sass and a lot of personality.
Yeah.
And this will come up a lot more in the second part that we do about the last five episodes. They do a lot more with Margaret.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, I mean, if she had been queen, I think they would have, again, have really had their hands full like they did with David / Edward.
Yeah.
Because, like, she's got so much personality, and she's not like Elizabeth in the way that she's very demure and, like, kind of wants to make everybody happy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, then they, you know, they kind of, they are making that correlation between them.
Yeah, they draw the parallels.
And, like, you know, he's an older man, and at this, like, they don't really, I don't think they paid too much attention to Margaret during the first few episodes. She's just the sister.
She's there. They do stress how much she meant to her father.
Mm-hmm.
But no, she's very much a background character in the first half of the series.
Yeah, until they start to really kind of, like, lean on the romance.
Well, sort of feel like the first half, or at least the first three episodes, are more about George than mm-hmm. they are about Elizabeth, even.
Yeah.
And then it is, like, the beginning of Elizabeth, but there's a huge focus on George, and then it becomes, you know, a real focus on Elizabeth and Philip, and then they bring in Margaret more.
Yeah, and leading up to the coronation, there's a lot of emphasis on the romance between David and Wallace, because he's being left out, and he's sad.
Yeah.
And he's flashing back to him being the king. There's, like, they're building the romance between Margaret and Peter.
Yeah.
And then they're also really putting an emphasis on the troubles that Philip and Elizabeth are having.
Yeah.
Because he's frustrated and he's bored. And he has been told at this point that his children are not going to have his last name.
Yeah, and he says that, you know, he's the only man in Great Britain whose children won't have his name. And that is apparently something that he's actually...
Mm-hmm.
said. There's a lot of the conversations that are between Philip and Elizabeth that, you know, historians say they took liberty on, which they have to. Like, nobody was a fly on the wall during these conversations.
And they typically are quite a private family.
They are. Like, we don't know much about the Queen's private life.
Yeah. I was reading an article, like, the same kind of stuff I was reading about when Charles becomes king.
Yeah.
And how people had concerns because he's very opinionated.
Yes.
About certain things, about, you know, the environment or whatever. Like, he's very outspoken.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Queen Elizabeth has always been very tight-lipped about her personal opinions
mm-hmm.
because she considers her role to be about unifying the monarchy and doing kind of what's best mm-hmm. for the country as a whole and not being about what her personal feelings are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the writer of this article was saying, just like, oh, what's going to happen when we have a monarch who suddenly, like, I feel this way and I feel that way. And the person said, like, the only thing I know about Queen Elizabeth is that she loves corgis.
Yeah, it's true. Like, she loves corgis. And
horses.
Yeah. And was a mechanic during the war. But, no, she's very private. And that is the role. And that is something that gets brought up a lot. And I think we'll talk more about that in the second half, though, when mm-hmm. we talk about the role of the monarch. Because mm-hmm. that becomes really much more relevant.
What seems to happen a lot, at least in the way that it comes across in the show, is that they talk about things as a couple.
Yeah.
Philip says things like, I want my children to have my last name. I want to live in our family home. I want things to be this way. She goes, of course, you're my husband. I want you to be happy.
Yeah.
She goes to talk to Churchill or somebody else or her mother or somebody in Parliament, and they go, no, no, no.
That's not the way it is.
You can't do that. And she has to go back and tell Philip, well, no, I'm sorry, we can't do that.
Yeah. And you see her becoming much stronger as the series goes on
mm-hmm.
and when Philip will say something to her and she'll just be like no.
Yeah. Well, especially when, I mean, this kind of leads to a pinnacle right before a coronation and mm-hmm. she, you know, he's kind of like bored and frustrated and he's going out and he's kind of like getting drunk with all these men's clubs mm-hmm. and learning to fly, and like she doesn't feel like they're spending a lot of time together, so she appoints him to help organize her coronation.
Yeah.
Which, like, to me seems like a terrible idea.
Well, especially, I was talking, my husband and I were
watching. It's all just a power struggle.
It's a power struggle, but also, like, so the way the coronation works is there's one of the dukes.
The Duke of Norfolk.
The Duke of Norfolk. Whoever's the Duke of Norfolk always plans the coronation.
That's their job.
And so you think about it, almost like, these people have been training for their entire life to do this job.
Yeah.
And instead you're like, nope, you're not going to do it. My husband is.
Yeah. That guy was pissed.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't you be?
Oh, yeah. I mean, also, it's kind of weird that that's your family's old job, but still, I mean.
Especially right now, where, like, we've had the same monarch for so long. The
family's had nothing to do.
They're like, I'm so bored.
They probably still have, like, three castles.
Probably.
But yeah, so she's like, Philip should be involved, and she says, don't go too crazy, which, of course, he, you know, wants to change everything and modernize it and blah, 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 and, you know, big uproar. Churchill's getting super pissed off about everything.
Churchill does not want him to go flying.
Yeah, it doesn't want him to fly because he's putting himself at risk and he's the father of the future king. Basically, everybody, like, is kind of really uncomfortable with everything that Philip is doing.
Yeah.
Which Philip doesn't give a flying fuck.
No, Philip's like, I'm gonna do it anyways.
Yeah, I mean, he's being a real brat.
Yeah.
During a lot of this stuff. So, like, and then there's the scene where he's planning the coronation, and Elizabeth finds out all these changes that he's been making, and she storms in.
Yeah.
Not in front of everybody, but she kind of pulls him aside. Mm-hmm. She's like, I told you not to go crazy. I told you not to make these changes. Like,
yeah.
And they have this argument about it, and he doesn't want to kneel before her because he feels like, as her husband, he should stand with her.
Yeah.
Which, like, I don't think there's any evidence that that happened.
No. And there's a lot of evidence that said that wouldn't have happened, that he's not that type of, that he would have understood the importance of ceremony.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's just kind of, you know, they're kind of making almost like an analogy for the frustration maybe he would have felt at having to kind of lose everything that would have made him sort of like a man and a husband and the head of a household.
Yeah.
Which he's just not anymore. He just kind of like doesn't have his career. I mean, like it does make sense that he would be super frustrated. But at the same time, he knew it was going to happen. But like we said, he thought he'd have more of a career.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you do feel bad for Philip at certain points, but like, the way he's written in the show, he's like such a, he's such a passive-aggressive brat sometimes.
Oh, he is. And he's not, yeah, he's just really quite awful.
Yeah.
And so, I guess, while they're planning the coronation, Mary dies.
Yeah.
And
Mary of Teck.
Mary of Teck.
Who I learned from my sweet, Royals of Europe poster that I got.
Oh, yeah, I loved your Royals of Europe, yeah.
That she's related to Vlad the Impaler.
Nice!
Which doesn't surprise me.
I can totally see that. Yeah. She is a force. Mm-hmm. So she dies, which actually, that the reason why I bring it up is I found it quite interesting, because that doesn't, and maybe it does in real life, it's just the way the show flows through, and they do say one of the things that they do take a little bit of liberty with is time, is that there doesn't seem to be a gap. It's like, funeral, coronation.
Yeah, I wonder how much of a gap there was.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But yeah, it does happen, I think, within the same episode.
It is, it's the same episode.
Yeah. So then they finally, I mean, and one of the big deals of the coronation that, at least in the show, Philip is pushing for is that it's televised.
Yeah.
Which is new and exciting. Which allows David and Wallace to watch it in France and have a fancy little party.
Yeah, and you get all of the commentary by David on what's happening.
Yeah.
Which was a really neat way of telling us what was going on in the coronation without having to fully explain it.
Yeah, I mean, in that way, like, the writing is so clever.
Yeah.
That, you know, you have, like, David is standing up in front of his guests, and, like, and he knows, but he, and he says at this one point when they have an interviewer, this woman, the American reporter, is in their home, David and Wallace's home in France, I think in possibly the episode before, and they're kind of doing this little fashion spread.
Yeah.
And, like, walking around their house and talking about, like, their clothes and stuff. It's a great little scene because they're posing in all these fantastic clothes, but it's also kind of awkward and weird.
Yeah.
And then the reporter's kind of in his room full of, you know, personal things, his office, and she's like, you know, oh, there's no pictures of your coronation. He's just, like, very, like, kind of bitterly. It's just, like, I didn't even get that far.
Yeah.
So he has this party and invites all these people over, and they're watching it, and he very, like, wistfully and, like, longingly is like, this is the part where this happens. And he's kind of making fun of it, too. He's just like, oh, there's that ostentatious gold coach. Like,
it's so uncomfortable.
So ridiculous. But then he's just talking about, like, you know, we get into the coronation, and, like, she comes in, and she's got all her robes, and, but, like, once you take off the robes and the crown, she's wearing quite a simple white dress, and then the archbishop comes in, and he anoints her with the oil.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that they turn the cameras off, and they put the tent over her, so you can't actually see that happening.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
And the part where David is talking about how, like, they create this magic, because you take a woman who is, you know, young and naive, and whatever, and you add all this kind of magic and drama, and she becomes a goddess.
Yeah.
And, like, I thought that was kind of...
I thought it was really neat. Yeah. And then the way that, because one of his guests is like, why don't we get to see it? And he wistfully says, because we're mere mortals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I found that so interesting.
Although, I just find that, like, random guest voice, who was, like, an American voice, who just, like... asking questions from the sideline was,
yeah,
like, a little bit forced, and you're just like, why does this happen? Like, thank you, exposition American. Yeah.
It's quite funny.
Yeah. And then at the end of that, David is super sad, and he is outside wearing his kilt, playing his bagpipes and crying.
Oh, no, you're just like, oh, poor David.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things about the televised coronation my husband Patrick brought to my attention yesterday was there's a really interesting story about how it was televised in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was really important that it gets televised throughout Britain. It's, you know, the first time that this has ever happened, but they're also feeling a lot of strain with the colonies at that time, and they're worried that the colonies are going to want to separate, and so they really want to make sure that it's televised.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in Canada. I don't think this would have been possible in Australia once I describe what happened.
On a note, during the reign of George VI is when it goes from being the empire to being the Commonwealth.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, it's definitely like they don't have as much control and power and majesty as they did have, which is fine, because you shouldn't own other countries essentially. So,
well, and that's why it's so important, the Commonwealth tour, is to reinforce that they are still a Commonwealth.
Yeah.
And so the way that it was televised in Canada is, so it's filmed at Westminster Abbey, because they don't have the ability to broadcast live at this time, like, right, all to Canada. So it's filmed at Westminster Abbey, then it is taken by helicopter to Heathrow, then it is put on a like a bomber jet and flown from Heathrow to New Brunswick, I want
to
say.
They have to actually physically move Newfoundland. The film around.
Yeah, so they have to physically move the film. So then the film is flown by a bomber from London to Goose Bay, Newfoundland. Then it is passed over to another bomber and flown from Newfoundland to Montreal.
Interesting.
And that's how it's broadcast out east. You can't get it to the west at this point.
At this point, I just always think like you can just send a signal,
yeah,
or something, but not then, I guess.
At this point, you can't.
I mean, even like in the scene at Wallace and Davis's house, it would be just such a tiny little shitty TV.
Yeah, and it's like, it's crazy how much you can't see on that TV.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other interesting thing is, so there was no television stations west of Ontario at that point. And so the way that Vancouver got to see it is they flew the BBC coverage all the way to Seattle, I believe. And then it is taken by Washington State Patrol up to Bellingham, and it is put on a radio broadcast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And for whatever reason, that radio station is able to air it, and so that's how it is heard by Vancouverites.
Well, way to make it local, Aaron.
Good job. I know. It's called Operation Pony Express.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Good. Also, I guess we should thank Pat.
Yes. Thank you, Patrick. Yeah, he was, he got very excited about it. He's like, Aaron, I have to tell you, because Pat knows all these things about history.
I regret not watching William and Kate's wedding on TV.
I know, I kind of do too. Although I was in that phase of my life where I was like, ugh, it's just so stupid. Like, I can't believe everybody is making a fuss out of this. It's just a wedding.
I think I probably watched footage of it afterwards. But I think at this point in my life, being like so into, you know, European royalty as I am, yeah, I would like watch it at 4 a.m.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure you and I would be having a party to watch it.
I mean, in like, this is not going to happen anytime soon, but when Elizabeth does pass away, which is not going to happen.
Yeah.
You and I, our lives are basically going to stop for, like, you know, the next week. And then we are going to, no matter what time the funeral happens,
we're going
to be there, I don't know, like, drinking gin and crying.
Yeah, I think we're just going to drink gin and cry for a week is really what's going
to
happen.
And then we'll have to watch the new coronation whenever that happens.
And then we'll probably rewatch The Crown and cry again.
Yeah.
Oh, there's going to be so much crying.
More seasons.
Yeah. Well, there are a bunch of more seasons coming, so.
I'm excited to see more about Margaret's party years.
I know.
Margaret's a party girl.
Her and the Kennedys.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be exciting.
So, yeah, it's basically, like, that's the end of episode 5, is that it's the coronation and, you know, they do this glorious ceremony, and Philip absolutely does bow to his wife. And
yeah, he does bow. Well, and you do see the moments where Philip is, realizing that he does, like, his new role. Like, there's even a scene at the, I think it's in episode 2 or 3, when they find out that her father has passed away, and she's getting off the plane, and it's the first time, because Philip used to sort of lead, like, walk ahead of her, or they'd walk at the same time, and they're about to get off the plane, and that, I think it's Tommy, the secretary, he's like, no, the crown goes first, you have to wait. And you see sort of Philip adjusting to those roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's interesting. I'm very excited to talk about the rest of it.
Yeah, me too. I think it's a good thing that we cut it into two, because
we talk a lot.
Oh, there's so many interesting little alleyways to talk about. I'm trying to think of, like, if there's anybody on the cast we didn't give, like, props to that we should have. Margaret is played by Vanessa Kirby,
who
is beautiful,
looks so much like Margaret,
and she's great in it. She's great as this, like, charismatic but kind of sulky, pouty, like, and we'll talk about Margaret a lot more in the second part of this, because she's got a much bigger role. We'll talk more about Anthony Eden,
who is played by Jeremy Norton, or Northam. Mm-hmm.
Northam. Yeah.
Who I adore.
Who plays Thomas More in The Tudors.
And Mr. Knightley in Emma.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of
him. We didn't really talk about Peter Townsend at all, but we'll get into him next time.
We will. I have the same problem with Peter Townsend that I had with the Doctor in WE, because they're on that same show that I watched.
Oh, yeah.
They're both on Coupling, and they play these, like, ridiculous people, and so I have problems taking them seriously. But I think he does a fabulous job, and I was much... It was much easier for me to take him seriously than it was when I was watching WE, which I realized for the first half of the podcast I called W.
You did, and I didn't correct you, because I figured, whatever.
Yeah.
You're just shortening an already very short title.
Exactly.
From two letters to one.
Exactly.
Yeah. But anyway, we'll conclude that first half of season one on The Crown, and we'll have to get together soon and do the second half.
Sounds good.
Okay, cheers.
Cheers.
Okay, that wraps up the first half of our two-part episode on The Crown Season 1, covering episodes 1 to 5. Stay tuned for when I post the second half. I hope you enjoyed that. And of course, if you want to send us an email with any suggestions, corrections, or just your thoughts, please message us at thetipsyarchives@gmail.com. And we are on Twitter at @tipsyarchives. Thanks for joining us.
They were the talk of the town, and when the band was playing, that hesitation you could hear her say, that some sensation, and the people would say,